There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve. Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 777, December 10th, 2018. Nasser?
Good evening to Mr. Rogers and postseason racing regards to the global F1 Weekly familia.
On today's program, do we need American power in F1? Could 2019 be even more boring? Mercedes already playing the psycho game. And of course, we've got special interview with George Russell. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Good evening, Mr. Rogers, and postseason racing regards to F1 Weekly Familia, and I have to ask you, it's podcast 777. Did you call Boeing for sponsorship?
I did.
And what did they say? Call someone who cares?
They referred me to
Airbus.
Exactly.
Story of our life, huh?
Totally.
So what's happening on the left coast, sir?
The left coast is still mourning the loss of Fernando Alonso in Formula One, but we will see him in America, so we're happy about that. But still, the draining and the emotions are still with us.
Well, the right coast is celebrating the birth of Nando in NASCAR land.
Exactly. This is taking camping chairs to a whole new level.
Yes, sir. I am really looking forward. You know, he will be at Daytona 24 hours. He will be at the Sebring 12 hours. I just took a few days off from work, so today was not a good day to ask them for a few more days off in January. But I will figure something out because, you know, I think it's better to go on a couple of days of thing called Roar before the 24. I think that probably will have better interview opportunities than race day at the Big D. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, but Nasser, I mean, we know that the Fernando interview will be the coup for F1 Weekly.
Well, I will put in a request, and as soon as I find out what days I can take off, I will put in a request. And I'm thinking, you know, that if he's going to race here 3-4 times, and I keep putting in my request, someday I just buy luck of draw, they will say, okay, you can talk to him for 10 minutes.
Man, that would that be awesome or what?
No, it will be definitely one of our biggest ever interviews.
It will be the biggest.
I'm really hoping we get the opportunity.
Well, my tip is, as long as you wear a hat that says free paella, you're in.
No, I'm going to be politically correct once. I'm going to go wearing a quinoa hat.
And I have mine.
And since this is Florida, I might even get some quinoa flip-flops.
Bravo, prego. Mille grazie.
But I'll go and tell him that Clark Rogers wears a quinoa mankini.
Yeah, but then he'll blush.
No, of course not. And that's when he will say, oh, I give you 20 minutes.
20 minutes, bravo.
Well, we can all dream, you know.
I understand.
So we'll see how it works out. But man, I gotta tell you this thing. The trip Toby Meister and I made to Montreal, man, that was a fantastic experience. The good thing is, though, I was dreading a lot of snow and very, very cold weather. Well, there was snow, but it was not as cold as I was expecting. So Toby and I are now Grand Prix track drivers in our own minds. And who needs super license when you can drive a circuit Gilles Villeneuve live free, eh? Did you see our pictures?
I did, and I want everybody to know that, see, Toby is a real person.
And so am I.
I know, but sometimes when we have technical problems, I always put the blame on Toby. And a lot of people thought he was fictional.
No, nothing is fictional at F1 Weekly. Everything is real.
That's bitching, dude. But yeah, that was exciting. But I want to know, at what lap did Danica Patrick throw a shoe?
Well, we actually thought about it, and I think we did do a sort of a salute to the shoe when we passed through that area. And I did tell Toby about the shoe being thrown. And I even said to him, that's a Clark Rogers favorite moment.
That is so wonderful. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, you've been to this track once, right? Once or twice?
Yes.
What was your impression of the facility?
I love the facility.
Well, you know, the track is very nice, old school racing facility with not much room to spare. So if you screw up, then, you know, you have a problem, as Kubica found out some years ago. And of course, you know, we went to the place he also crashed, and we're all very happy he's alive and well and coming back into motor racing.
Now, did you stop at the Wall of Champions?
Oh, one moment, please. It's all coming.
Thank you.
Yes. Oh, of course we did. I mean, this was one of the best trips I have ever made, and we had a lot of fun. And man, I got to tell you, I don't know if you've seen the new 2019 Nissan Altima. This is a very nice car, and we were renting this. And talking of Wall of Champions, it was, you know, wet and snow, but we drove the car very slowly to the Wall of Champions, as close as we could, and we have a video of this. And all of this was in the rain. So great memories of this track, at least for me, you know, local boy Gilles, for whom the track is named. He won the inaugural race there in 1978, also in the rain, in the beautiful, one of the most beautiful cars of all time, Ferrari 312 T3. And, you know, I drove a lap, we drove a lap, and he let me stay. He was kind. He let me start from pole position, and he started his lap from the front row, second slot, let's just say Bottas' place. And Toby did the audio as we were doing the, you know, lap of the circuit. And the best part was, the most fun we had, we went to the place where JB, remember when he won the longest F1 race on the last lap over Sebastian, and Sebastian went off a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, we did a reenactment and some sound also. So, you know, boys will be boys. So, man, this was fantastic. And only if Mr. Peter Brazier was there, he would have been jolly well pleased and proud of our antics.
Since you rented a Nissan Altima, did Carlos Ghosn pay the bill?
No, but I did send him an email that, you know, the $39 per day turned into $3,900 per day. And he said, you know, all we need to do to get this approved is have his sister sign for it.
And loving every minute of it.
Yes, and it's interesting you talk about Carlos Ghosn, because we talked about him on as we were driving this Nissan Altima at the track, because, you know, there's a history there, Renault and Fisico. I remember when I went to the, if I remember correctly, the 2005 Canadian Grand Prix, it was super, super hot on Saturday. But on Sunday, if I remember correctly, it was Fisico in the lead, the Mile 7 Renault.
Bravo.
Yeah. And this is, you know, very nice. I mean, I'm absolutely thrilled over the Montreal moon that we did this trip. And even though, you know, it's interesting, this track is located in French-speaking part of Canada, it has not been too kind to French drivers. Both Jean-Pierre Jabouille and Olivier Panis broke their legs here, if you remember.
I do.
But on a positive note, our man of new motivation took his and only one and only win here on his birthday. And that's another guy I can't wait to interview.
Yeah. Motivation.
And you know, past weekend I was in Montreal, this weekend I was in Toronto, and the beauty of the East Coast is that in less than 3 hours you can be flying from Tampa to Montreal or Toronto. So Toby and I are seriously thinking of going to the Canadian Grand Prix. You know, if I fly from here on a Friday night, and take a flight back on Sunday, even early Monday morning. I think I can make this happen without asking any time off from work. So that is very, and they are building new paddock passes, paddock club there. So the facility will look very, very nice because, you know, it was a little bit aged compared to, you know, the mega million-dollar structures we have in Baku and Abu Dhabi and Burkina Faso. So this will be a fantastic place to go once this whole thing is completed. I was very, very surprised that the top was open. That was a, and there were some other people also, you know, enjoying the their Grand Prix careers.
See.
Now, when you were there, what year was that, if you remember?
2010.
And did you get a chance to go to the Gilles Villeneuve Museum?
No, sir.
Well, this was very, very high on my bucket list, and I'm glad I was able to go there also. And we went there on Sunday morning. And this is located in his hometown of Berthierville, near Montreal, not too far from the track. And I obviously have great memories of him. I remember how I got the news, you know, totally unknown driver from Canada coming into Formula One. And what was amazing is, you know, interestingly, he made his Grand Prix debut at Silverstone, as I'm sure you know, in 77. And another person who made his Grand Prix debut later became his good friend was Patrick Tambay. And guess who else made their first appearance in a teapot?
René Arnoux.
I think it was Jean-Pierre Jabouille that Renault first came into Formula One. It was Jabouille or Arnoux, but I think it was Jabouille. So a lot of history there. And of course, Gilles Villeneuve had one of the greatest wins in history of Formula One, Spanish Grand Prix, Jarama, 1981. And our favorite, which we will talk till the day we kick the Coleman bucket, Dijon Prenois, 1979. Now, you know what, I was really, what do you think, would you, would, if you go there, what car would you expect to be there? Seriously.
Dijon 79.
What else from his career?
His Hugo.
You know what I was expecting? I was not expecting the 79 Renault car because that is just way too historical for Renault for the race. It was their first Grand Prix win and, of course, their home Grand Prix. So I did not expect that car. But I was expecting at least a Ferrari 126 C2, which was the last car he drove in 1982. And what would be really, really fitting for this museum would be, the, you know, the car with which he won his first Grand Prix in Montreal. But you will be surprised to know that there was not a single Formula One car there belonging to Gilles Villeneuve. Do you believe that?
I believe it. They're expensive.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, Ferrari could have donated a car, you know. I mean, this is one of the most well-remembered, most likable Grand Prix drivers of all time, even though he had a very brief career. And I thought I had read somewhere that they had donated a car. Maybe it was not on display. But they have on display a lot of snowmobiles and a lot of trophies from his snowmobile you know, career, which was very, very successful. His Formula Atlantic cars are there, which was very nice to see them because I've done a lot of reading on those things. And they also have cars from his son. You remember his son, right?
Of course.
Jack Villeneuve. You know, interestingly, the young lady there, I asked her, does Jack ever come here? She goes, oh, yeah, he's here regularly at least once a week. He was here just a few days ago. And I said, you're talking about the son? She goes, no, 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 I'm talking about the brother. So a little lost in translation there. Yeah, I wouldn't expect Jacques Villeneuve Jr. to be there because, you know, he lives in Switzerland and does all the Formula One commentary, so that's not expected. A couple of interesting cars they do have is they have Jacques Villeneuve's Indy 500 winning car, and Toby and I were wondering, is this the real car or a replica? But you know what they say, if it looks like a winning car, it is the winning car. And they also had the Bar Honda, you know, the one that had... Remember in Formula One, you can only have one paint scheme for both cars?
Right. I remember this controversy. It was Lucky Strike on one side and I don't know, something else on the other.
555. No, well, they had one car in Lucky Strike, white and red, and the other was in blue and yellow, which is the color of 555, both being brands of British American Tobacco. And then when Bernie Ecclestone, you know, threw the book at Craig Pollard, he had the car half colored 555 and half in the Lucky Strike, and in between was the YKK Zipper, which was very creative and very, very cool. And that car is there. And the paint scheme looks nice, I have to say that. But if you are ever in Montreal, Mr. Rogers, I would suggest rent a Nissan Altima and take a trip to this museum. It's not very big, worth the visit. And I was very pleased. You know, they have this guest book there, and there were these entries from people from all over the world, you know, which was very nice to see. And I have to say what I said on the podcast a few times. Gilles Villeneuve, even though I think he won like 6 races and, of course, did not win the championship, and he's been gone many, many years now, as you know, since 1982. I think down the history of racing, he will be remembered more than drivers, quite a few drivers who won championship, just because of the character he was and the kind of person he was. It was just has left a very, very positive image. Any thoughts on this, sir?
No, I wasn't there, Nass. My thoughts are right here in the office.
Any chance of making to the Grand Prix of Canada?
Me?
See.
No, because, see, our entire budget goes to Nasser Hamid, all the traveling and stuff that moi gets stuck here cleaning the executive toilet.
There you go. There you go. So what else you want to talk about today, sir? Shall we talk about a little bit the key players of the 2018 season on and off the track and look forward to the next season, which is coming soon? You know, it's amazing. We're only a few days away from 2019. Are you excited?
Oh, so excited with Mercedes already playing the psychological warfare game. I just love it.
So what game are we referring to now?
Oh, yeah, we took a step back in our 2019 motor. We might have a problem. I mean, I love it. And what's really the best part is people are going to believe them when all they're doing, see the big knob that Toto has? Well, they have so much power that now it goes to 12, and they were having a hard time writing the number 12 on the knob. So, no, it's going to be very boring. Lewis is going to win his 6th championship, and Bottas is going to say, this is the second worst season of my life.
No, he might say, this is the worst season of my life. Well, I have to say, when I read that news item about what you just described, Mercedes having problem with their 2019 engine, I mean, I had to smile also. What's the problem? Instead of being 7/10 faster than everybody, it was going to be like 6/10 or half a second faster.
I mean, they were mocking everybody.
Yes. And I think this is just, you know, we don't know what's going to happen till we see the real action in preseason testing and the first few races. But I think championship number 6 is going to be a little bit easier for LCH because the puppy is gone from, and Seb's puppy is gone from the stable.
Yeah, well, not only that, but Sebastian Vettel will have other problems, and his name is Charles.
Well, you know, yes. Talking of Sebastian Vettel, you know, have you seen his, he was at the, in St. Petersburg, Russia, for the FIA prize-giving ceremony and all that?
I wasn't there, Nass.
No, nor was I. But have you seen his picture? He's got a mustache going there.
Yeah. His name is Mustasha.
Yeah. And if he trimmed it from the side a little bit, he might look like another Deutschen Uber Ruhr.
Exactly.
And apparently Kimi got a lot of press because he was talking quite a bit, which means 2 sentences from him.
I agree.
Now, I know you have already given the 2019 championship to Lewis, and we'll have to see how it works out. But your thoughts on a great season by Car 44, and where does 5th championship put Lewis in the pantheon of great performers?
I don't think it does.
5 championship, 2nd in Grand Prix wins. What, are you going to rate him with like De Chazres and Fisico?
Exactly. I mean, put him in a minority, then I'm impressed. But let me put it this way. The top 5 drivers in F1, if they were in that car, would be doing the exact same thing.
No, I have to disagree with you. Maybe 1 or 2, not 5. But there is already one driver there who was GP3 champion, who was Formula Renault. Bottas beat Ricciardo to win the Formula Renault Championship. So I have to disagree with you that top five drivers would have done exactly what he has done.
My top five drivers are not the same as your top five drivers.
You know, you're right. I'm sorry. They are Fernando Alonso, and Nando.
How did you know?
Well, I guess, man. I just had to.
Those top drivers would have done it.
Well, do I need to turn back pages to the year 2007?
No. That's when Kimi Raikkonen won.
Yes, because two people kept taking it. That's what's going to happen, I think, at Ferrari. I just don't see Charles Leclerc, because he set the fastest time, which was just, you know, postseason testing. But this kid is no slouch. This is not Marcus Ericsson coming to Ferrari.
Well, let's not bring Marcus Ericsson into this. He has bigger problems.
No, he's coming to IndyCar racing, so he'll be a happy camper.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I think he's going to be fine in IndyCar. I think Leclerc will be a problem for Vettel, while Hamilton is laughing and giggling and buying Bottas big bottles of herring.
You know, there are still, I mean, today I saw a sort of, well, you know, could be one man's opinion. I mean, there are still rumors circulating that Bottas may be replaced next season by Ocon. And, you know, stranger things. If Fernando Alonso can go back to Ron Dennis and McLaren, Bottas being replaced by Ocon will not surprise me.
Anything is possible. There's no nice people in F1.
Yeah, and talking of Ocon, you know, it's apparently the guy had two done deals with McLaren and Renault, and then they just were trying to get the best deal, and last minute Renault said, uh-oh, Ricciardo is coming here. And by that time, McLaren had signed Carlos Sainz. So Ocon gets the Isaac Hayes CD of the year.
Shift!
Yes. Okay, but you know, I have to say this about Lewis Hamilton. Coming from Great Britain, which has produced names like Stirling Moss, Jim Clark, Graham Hill, Jackie Stewart, what Lewis has achieved is very, very impressive. It's very easy to get sidetracked because we've seen a lot of drivers come into Formula One with a lot of hype and have not lived up to the hype. And a lot of time, they've gone into the wrong team at the wrong time. You know, people like Ronnie Peterson, Carlos Reutemann, in the right circumstances with the right car, they could have become world champion, but it was not to be. So I'm very happy for his success, but I want to see a very challenging 2019. And, you know, whoever wins, as long as it's winning fair and square, you cannot blame Lewis Hamilton for mistakes made by Ferrari and Sebastian Vettel.
Did you use the word challenging?
Yes, sir.
What, the walk from the cafeteria to the car?
Yeah, or maybe unloading the car, you know.
Yeah, challenging is not the word I would come up with. I'm sorry.
Well, sooner or nothing is forever. Yeah, well, you know, generally we all agree that for the next 2 years, Mercedes probably will have the upper edge. Maybe not by a big margin, but what will be very interesting when the new formula kicks in, one will be 2021, and hopefully we are here to see that, witness that. And even then, if Mercedes comes out with a package that's very, very strong and head and shoulders above the rest, that will really demoralize the competition.
If that happens, I say one or two manufacturers could pull out.
That would be very, very bad.
Oh, I know, but manufacturers are in this just for financial sense. I mean, if it doesn't make sense, then you go bye-bye.
Yeah, but, you know, I have to say this. I like the facts when they were talking about after Seb won the opening round, two races, you know, how most of the drivers have gone on to win the championship. But I have to say, man, as strong as he was winning in Silverstone, LCH's hometown, at Spa, I really thought this was going to be his first championship with the red car, which he very much wants.
Well, that's
because
what,
his hero, Schumacher, won a lot of championships.
But that's what Mercedes wanted you to think. It was all fake news. It was all manipulated.
My biggest fear was LCH, because LCH got rattled by Nico Rosberg a few times. And the mistakes Seb made, to be honest with you, I really expected Lewis to make quite a few mistakes. Not to the extent of what Seb did, but I expected him to screw up, have some argy-bargy, silly mistake that he has made, or have a off weekend, which was pretty obvious when he was with Nico Rosberg. But none of that happened. And his finishing record on the podium, winning races, the second half was magical.
Magical?
For me, it was. No, perfect. You know, you go and screw up somewhere.
I understand, but I saw no magical. But, we're different people. I understand that, sir.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I guess you'll have to just wait till the Formula One season starts and there is no Nando. And they're even still talking about him coming back in the right circumstances.
They can talk all they want. He's not coming back.
Yeah, and the only way he'll come back is all of a sudden McLaren, Renault, is winning pole position after pole, and one of their new drivers completely bombs, and then they will bring. What else, sir?
Me? That's it. I'm done. Nando's out. Lewis is going to get another championship. I'm only waiting to hear Christian Horner curse Honda. That's the only thing I'm looking forward to. That's it. Nothing else.
Well, you know, talking of Christian Horner, Danny Rick, who was one of his drivers this year, once made a comment, and I think it was this year, I don't win boring races. But bailing out of Red Bull into the Renault camp, he may get all the excitement he wants from his new teammate, Nico Hülkenberg, if the package is competitive. And I think 2019 will be a make or break season for one of them. Nico Hülkenberg, like Stoffel Vandoorne, Romain Grosjean, Lewis Hamilton, won anything and everything in junior Formula. And he has never been in a very good car. In Formula One, or a competitive car, I should say. So we really haven't seen what he can deliver. And Danny Rick has been in a decent car and has over-delivered for sure. Going 3-0 against Seb, I never thought that would happen. So this is a great matchup that I'm looking forward to next year. Daniel Ricciardo and Nico Hülkenberg. Who do you think will prevail?
I think it's going to be an even match.
Yeah, you know, I think it will be quite even. And if they cannot fight for pole and first and second, I think there will be harmony. But if this car next year is capable of winning races, then we're going to have the same situation as we have seen with any time you have two tigers in a cage.
I agree.
You know, among the things that I'm hoping on a positive note, and we can, you know, dream and hope and whatever, all, but what's going to happen, it's going to happen, is the Italian Renaissance in Formula One, in terms of driver. And, in the first 4 years of the Grand Prix Championship, three of the championships were won by Italian drivers. Of course, we all know Nino Farina was the first, and then Ascari got two in a row. And his last championship in 53 is the last time an Italian driver won a Formula One World Championship. And we can give them half the credit for Mario Andretti winning in 78, but as an Italian citizen, it's been a long, long time since we had a champion. So I'm just hoping that Antonio Giovinazzi will deliver. And he also has a very good benchmark. You know, Kimi, even on his off day, is still a very fast driver. But I think that if Giovinazzi cannot rattle the cage of Kimi, then he's going to be a one-season F1 racer. What say you?
I agree with that. I think Kimi is still strong. He's pumped up. He thinks Sauber is going to build him a great car. I think Kimi's going to be pretty strong next year.
Well, how strong can you be with the package they have?
You could be pretty strong, especially if they get that Ferrari package is good.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't think they can fight for podium finishes, but top five maybe. Do you see Romain? I'm surprised they have kept Romain Grosjean, but, you know, money also plays a big part. And I don't think they're paying him $10-15 million. Do you think he'll survive beyond 2019?
No. I think he's out of there, but they don't. The problem is Romain Grosjean is good for what they're doing. But don't forget, you know, they're slowly climbing the ladder of success in Formula One, and eventually they're going to realize they need El Machismo.
Okay, you know what is interesting among the three new drivers coming in? This is, I think, like the first time in many years that the drivers who finished first, second, third in GP2 or Formula 2, as they call it now, they are all moving into Formula 1 next season. Lando Norris was second. He's with McLaren. George Russell was the winner, the championship winner, so he is going to Williams to be Kubica's teammate. And I don't know if we had mentioned this on our last podcast that Alexander Albon is the new driver for Toro Rosso, the British tie racer. Did we talk about this last time, sir?
No, we did not, sir.
Well, you know, he, like many drivers, used to, many of the young, talented drivers, used to be in the Red Bull program, and then they dropped him because he was not up to their, Dr. Marco's super high standards. So they dropped him, and he almost had his, racing career over. But then this French Formula 2 team, Dams, gave him pretty much almost a free ride this year in Formula 2, which I believe was the second year in the series. And he won races, and he did a very, very good job. I mean, had he done this thing in his first year in Formula 2, somebody would have picked him up among the top teams. But nevertheless, did a very good job, won a few races, finished third in the championship, and now he will be at Toro Rosso. And you know, Brandon Hartley, he's gone, and he has been snapped up by Porsche for their sports car program. So I'm happy for him.
Yeah, me too.
But I don't know if you remember, you know, when Brandon Hartley was in British Formula 3, courtesy of Red Bull, there was a lot of hype around him, and very rightly so, based on his performance up to that time. But I do remember very well us talking during the season, long before it was over, the way he's going, it's not going to be pleasing Dr. Marco, because his teammate was also Red Bull guy. I think it was Jaime Alguersuari. So I think Brendan Hartley has fallen short of general expectations of, you know, what you bring into Formula One, not just by Dr. Marco's standards, but by, you know, general observation of who makes it in Formula One.
And let's face it, Brendan Hartley knew that he was pretty lucky to get a second chance. He was there. It's done. Let's move on.
Yeah. How do you think Mr. George Russell, F2 champion, will do, and Lando Norris?
I don't know. You know, he's a talented young man, but it's a tough business.
It is. But, you know, his teammate has some years of experience, Carlos Sainz. And if Lando Norris impressed your hero, Fernando Alonso, when they were teammates at Daytona 24 Hours last year. I'm sorry, this year, right?
Right.
Okay, and I think that if he can get ahead of Carlos Sainz on a regular basis, Carlos Sainz Jr., that's not going to be good for Carlito.
It won't. I don't think that's going to happen.
What do you think will happen at McLaren?
I think McLaren is going to have bigger problems. They're going to be at the back talking to Williams a lot.
And talking of Williams, do you expect Kubica to overpower George Russell?
No. What I like about Kubica, he brings in that fire, that fight.
That's what they're talking about.
I'm looking forward to it.
And Claire is loving the pierogies he's bringing to their team.
Exactly. She's having one every morning.
Yes, that's what I hear. But I gotta tell you something. If George Russell gets overpowered by Kubica, which I don't think will happen, but if that happens, that's not gonna be good for his future with Toto Wolff.
No, and he can't let that happen. He can't let the old man of the sea bounce all over him. No, George Russell, that's his first call of duty right there, is to out-qualify Kubica every day.
And I have to agree with you that I hope I'm wrong, but I do not expect McLaren to be running ahead of Toro Rosso or Force India, Racing Point now.
That's going to be a tough call. I don't know.
So anything else you are expecting or want to talk about the 2019 saison, sir?
No. FIA Euro F3 is merged with GP3. So now they're called Formula 3. But now, along with the DTMs, we have Formula Masters.
Yeah, they will be using the cars in F3 that were used in F3 this year. So it's good that this series is being preserved. You know, it has changed. At one time, it was known as F3 Euro Series. So I'm glad that there will be some sort of F3 cars. And the Pau Grand Prix was in danger also there for the Formula 3 cars. So they will race these Formula Masters cars.
Which is great. Because Poe has been there since the 20s. We need to keep that Grand Prix.
Yes, sir. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place. And I'm so glad I was able to go there last year. And Lando Norris almost won the Poe Grand Prix. And talking of F3, you know, Mr. Mick Schumacher won the championship. And it has been announced that he will move up to Formula 2 with Prema, our team, or Prema team, the Italian-based team. And he's been with them for a few years already. And Toto Wolff is also singing praises of him. So let's see how it goes.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear Toto already on the Schumacher bandwagon. I think it's, once again, warfare against Ferrari. These people never stop.
Well, that name is so big, you know, but I have to say something. If Mick Schumacher, this is my prediction. If Mick Schumacher is leading the F2 championship halfway through the season, or the moment he wins three races, three feature races, if that is done before halfway season, he will have a Formula One contract for 2020. 2020.
In the year 2525.
Yes, sir. So it will be quite a day to see that happen.
Yeah.
You know, Formula 2 is a tough nut to crack because we had talents like Esteban Gutierrez, Alexander Rossi, Jules Bianchi, Felipe Nasr. They, you know, when they got to GP2, as it was called then, they had a lot of success and a lot of momentum going for them. But none of these drivers won the championship in GP2.
Yes, it's going to be very exciting. Never, you know, whatever happens, Mick Schumacher will be in Formula One.
Well, let's hope so. And let's hope he gets there based on performance and not on Mama writing a big check.
Well, I think it will be on performance. I think Prema is a very, very good outfit.
Yeah. And the name is so big, you know, it will be very hard not to get a sponsor for him.
Well, that's the thing. Let's face it. Liberty is going to want Schumacher there. The reason why Danica Patrick went to NASCAR is called the dollar.
Yeah. Called hoopla.
Lots of hoopla, lots of bratwurst, and that's what keeps the cars running.
Yeah, and his cousin, which would be Ralph's son, David Schumacher, he's doing a pretty decent job in junior Formula. So hopefully, who knows, just like we had Ralph and Michael, we may have David and Mick Schumacher.
Okay, what about Leo?
Leo Mansell, well, I think he's on extended gardening leave from motorsports.
Thank you. But he's doing a great job as the greenskeeper for that golf course.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
Indeed. So there you have it. Last word?
Last word. We want to thank everybody for listening to F1 Weekly, for all their love and support. And my thanks again for Toby Meister for a fantastic trip to Canada. And we had a great time. And we might be coming again very soon.
And do you have any calendars left, or are you already sold out?
We are shipping. Actually, that's where I was at the post office this evening. We're doing what we can, and we thank everybody who ordered one or two. And it's a nice calendar, fire and ice, sizzling and simmering performances. Sorry we could not include Lewis Hamilton and Bottas this season in this calendar, but, you know, we are in the history books now, and we may see them soon. Maybe I should put Nando on the cover.
Sold out.
All going to San Jose, California, right?
Bravo, prego. Mille grazie. And Nas, please introduce this special interview, George Russell.
Okay, sir. This is an interesting chap and a very quick kid. I was introduced to him in, I believe it was 2012, when I went to the SCUSA karting event in Vegas. And he was a very big name in karting, and we interviewed him there. He was very quick on that day, and he was actually leading the race, dominating the race, and somebody kept creeping up on him, and late in the race passed him to win the race. George Russell was second. The winner was Lance Stroll. Surprise, surprise. And we also had Max Verstappen in that race. So quite a few talents of the future were there. And then he moved into British Formula 4, which he won. He raced in European Formula 3, went to GP3, won that, I believe, in his rookie season. And now he has done a tremendous, tremendous job winning the Formula 2 championship. Basically, totally dominated the series and won in his rookie season. He has been part of Mercedes Toto's Wolfpack, member of the Toto's Wolfpack for a few years. And we are happy for him that he is making his Grand Prix debut in Melbourne next season. And hope our listeners enjoy a chat with a fantastic star of the future, Mr. George Russell.
Okay, folks, I'm here with George Russell. George, good to meet you again. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you. And yourself?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Congratulations on a mega season in Formula 2 and your arrival in Formula 1. Where do we go from here?
Thank you very much. As it currently stands, I am finishing off a season as reserve driver for Mercedes. I still have to obviously clinch the title in Formula 2. Many people are talking like I've already won the championship, but I still have to do the job in Abu Dhabi. So, and then when the flag falls in Abu Dhabi, I will be fully focused with Williams.
That season has been very impressive for you. You've won a lot of races. I was expecting a battle royale between you and fellow Brit, Mr. Lando Norris. Are you surprised at how things have turned out for you?
I think a lot of people were not expecting a battle. I think they were expecting Lando to run away with the championship. So I was very looking forward to this season racing him. There was a lot of talk surrounding Lando, and it was just a win-win situation for me. There was less pressure on my shoulders, more pressure on his shoulders, and I had a fantastic relationship with ART team, and I knew that we could do some great things together in 2018.
Okay. Did you ever race against Lando in karting?
Yes, we raced each other for 1 year in 2009. I was in my last year of cadets, and he was in his first or second year. So we were racing each other, but not actually battling at the time.
Okay. Now, before the F2 season started, was there any requirement from Toto in terms of performance and result, or is he a very friendly wolf?
He's definitely a friendly wolf at points, but he's very, you know, he really motivates it and gets everybody working for the same goal. Last year in GP3, I had set targets. It was very, very clear, very simple. Go out, win the championship, avoid making silly mistakes, interact well with the team. Whereas for this season in Formula 2, as there was a new car, it was difficult to put a target on it. And ART had just been off the back of two difficult seasons in Formula 2, GP2. So they said they would decide, or just judge as the season progressed.
Now, you mentioned GP3, you won the championship in your rookie season, very good and impressive. Compare the GP3 car and with the Formula 2 car, and also the depth of competition in both series.
To be honest, I think GP3 and Formula 2 is two very similar and very good cars. Formula 2 is literally better, very slightly better in all areas. Slightly faster, slightly more grip, better tyres. So a Formula 2 is basically a big GP3 car, in my opinion. And obviously the depth of talent this year in Formula 2, I think it's been huge. I think there's always been great talent in Formula 2, GP2, but I don't think there's been as many drivers as there has been this year capable of winning races on their day. You know, in my opinion, there are a good 12 to 15 drivers all capable of winning races on their good day. So I think the competition was very tough.
You mentioned you're with ART, a chap named Lewis Hamilton also raced with them. Did you test with other teams before deciding on them, or when you're in the part of the Mercedes program, who makes the decision which team to go with?
Who made that decision, I'm not exactly sure. But for GP3, it was absolutely clear ART were the team to be with. After my season in GP3, I was very keen to continue that relationship with ART. I had built a great foundation with the team, And again, for us, that was a clear choice to continue with them.
Okay.
We see you in Mercedes garage during F1 races. You know, when people normally don't get to Formula One, they go to IndyCars, DTM. In your case, it's the reverse. You gave up on DTM to get a ride in F1. Tell us a little bit about that background.
Yes, pretty much as you said, I was in Formula 3, and I had the opportunity from BMW to test their car, and that went extremely well. And off the back of that, I got offered a factory contract to be a full-time race driver the following year. And for me at that time, there was Formula One was not on the radar. I had no connections. I was 17 years old at the time, and this contract arrived, and I was over the moon, and I was, you know, days away from signing when the phone rang from Mercedes, and I took the risk. It was not the contract wasn't on the table to start with. It was an option for 1 year, and I took the risk to turn down a factory contract and a career for life almost in motorsport for a risk for Mercedes to take me or not. So it was a risk, high risk, high reward.
Yes, absolutely. Now, you may not remember this, but some years ago we met in Vegas at the SCUSA karting event. What was your impression of the American karting scene?
I really enjoyed the SCUSA event. Obviously, there was a huge amount of drivers. I think there was a grid of 65. Things are very different over there, but I really enjoyed it. We were all under one huge tent where about 40 carts were underneath it, whereas in Europe you'd only have a tent of about 5 to 10 carts. So I really enjoyed the atmosphere there, and I really want to go back one day.
Now, they say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Did you take some stories you can share with us?
No, I was only 2011 and 12, so I would have been 13 and 14, so definitely no stories. Just a great experience and a great atmosphere in Vegas.
Okay, I'll catch up with you after your second trip there. Okay, they call racing a dog-eat-dog world. Among the drivers you have been racing against, have you developed any friendships off the track where you guys hang out together?
I have a very good relationship with Alex Albon. We used to live in the same city, so we spend quite a lot of time together playing golf. I used to go around his house for dinner quite a few times, and we've raced each other for a number of years now. So yeah, I'd say Alex Albon is the closest racing friendship I've grown to.
You are from King's Lynn. Have you ever run into Martin Brundle at the local Tesco or Starbucks?
No, so I'm born in King's Lynn. I only lived there for 1 year, so I never actually bumped into him. But I'm sure I'll be referred to the King's Lynn and Martin Brundle comments for years to come.
Okay. Now, next year you make your Formula One debut. Team, you're with Williams, going through a very tough time. What are your expectations?
I'm extremely motivated and excited for next season. I think it was clear to me when I was meeting the Williams team how much passion and how much talent there is for Formula One, from their engineers to the designers, just to everybody within the factory. They've obviously had a very tough season this year, but I really believe that there will be a fresh start next year, and we can really push forward and get Williams back to where they belong and fighting at the front of the midfield. In terms of an actual target, I think our goals will be to maximise every weekend. If the car's only capable of finishing 12th, bring it home in 12th. If it's capable of 4th, bring it home in 4th. And on top of that, develop as quick as possible and quicker than the others.
Well, I wish you all the best, and given your background, I'm sure success is not too far for you in Formula One. Question I have next is, apart from Silverstone, is there a track you would most want to win in a Formula One car?
I would like to win in a Formula One car, is that?
Your first win, but I'm trying to find.
My first win, okay. La la la. No, Silverstone is my favourite circuit. This one stands out, I think. Probably the Monaco Grand Prix, other than Silverstone, if I had to choose a Grand Prix to win, I think with all of the history and just Monaco itself, that would be a fantastic one to win.
And how good are you as a race car driver in the rain?
I've always gone very well in the rain, so I don't want to big myself up or be cocky, but yeah, generally the performance has been good in the rain.
And final question, looking back at your racing career so far, was there a season that stands out for you where you developed most as a racing driver?
2018.
This season?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I think the Formula 2 car and the Pirelli tyres are not an easy combination to maximise. And I felt like from the start of the year, I learned a huge amount from the first race in Bahrain. And I learned a lot of things about myself, also how to deal with the team and the atmosphere within when things aren't going perfect. And I felt like I just learned a huge amount throughout this year. And I'm really putting that into force of the second half of this year. And I think it's really paying off.
Thank you very much.
George, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Thank you, Nas. Keep up the good work. I miss Nando. I want to thank everybody who listens. Good night.